The title of my talk, I felt this morning that it might be a little bit of cheating because this S-wave superconductor I'm going to talk about is novel just because of the structure of its defects, the structure of its vortices, and the structure of the Josephson junction you can make out of it. So to begin and get things started, let's talk about what do we talk about in general in condensed matter. And that's the classification of the phases of matter. This has been done for a long time using the paradigm of Landau, classifying phases using symmetries, like the liquid water or the ice, which are the same material, different phases. In liquid water, when you're in water, whichever direction you look or how much distance you move, you see the same thing around you. But when you're in the ice, you have to either move by one lattice spacing or multiple lattice spacing to see the same thing, or if you turn around, you can't look in any direction and see the same thing. So in a sense, the symmetry is broken to a reduced symmetry in ice, and this has been used to classify different phases and phase transition quite successfully for a long time, until cases appeared where it's not possible. Maybe the best known one is the Hall effect, where you put the 2D electron gas in a strong magnetic field. Clearly, it's not the same state. It has robust edge states. It becomes gapped in the bulk. But there is no symmetry that you can identify this phase with. So people realized that you need something more. And then the topology came in, and they showed that Hall phase is topologically distinct from the ordinary 2D metal gas, if you like. But this was first done only in a strong magnetic field and at very low temperatures. So people were looking for the cases where this happens in more mundane situations. And it actually did. So this is an example that I really liked, and at the end will be connected to the things that I'm going to talk about later. But this is a very simple example which showed you, without having a strong magnetic field, you can have some novel physics which shows it phase up just on the boundaries of the system, like quantum Hall effect. So this is the model. Consider a 1D solid. And assume that each side of the solid has two orbitals, this red and blue. And there are some hopping between the orbitals within one unit cell or between the orbitals of the nearby cells. Okay? I can write down the wave function associated with each cell by two-component wave function and write down the hopping Hamiltonian, which describes the dynamic of this system. Now, you have some translation invariance. So as natural, you do the Fourier space, try to diagonalize this Hamiltonian, and you get this dispersion, okay? So you basically get two bands naturally because your unit cell had two sides, and there is some sort of particle hole symmetry. So let's see what can we say about the dispersion of this Hamiltonian. And I can also write down the original Hamiltonian in this simple form in terms of the wave vector I'm looking at these sigma operators, which acts on this two-site space. Okay. Now, let's look at the symmetries of this model. If you look at time reversal symmetry, basically what it does is take a momentum to minus its value. And if you look at the Hamiltonian, there will be two points in the 1D Borellian zone where time reversal basically doesn't do anything, time reversal invariant point. And that is the point with momentum equal to zero and momentum equal to pi. Okay? Now, let me also assume that the orbitals are designed such that they exchange into each other under parity, okay? You can set the right orbital, which does that for you. Then what parity does is to also take k to minus k, but then if I choose the orbital as such, it will also act as a sigma x, okay? Now, this has two eigenvalues, plus and minus. The now, if you look at the eigenvalue of the states at k equal to zero, you have two states, lower and upper, plus and minus a plus b, and at p, you have a minus b, okay? Now, the lower band, which is this band, at k equal to zero, will always have eigenvalue of p equal to minus one. But at k equal to pi, depending on a or b is larger, you can have eigenvalue of p equal to one or minus one. So if you multiply the eigenvalues of p at these two time reversal invariant points, depending on a or b is larger, you can get one or minus one, okay? Now let's look at real space, okay? In real space, if a is larger than b, if you go to extreme limit, when b is zero, a is finite, every action happens within a unit cell, okay? Nothing is off. Now if you cut the lattice between two, remember this is one unit cell, between two unit cells, nothing happens. There's no action between them, so system is perfectly happy. But in the opposite limit, where A is zero, B is non-zero, if you cut, there will be a dangling site because every action happens between the sites. There will be a dangling site at each end, okay? Now remember, this is connected to this. This is the case where the multiplication of the parities is minus one, okay? Now, this is a hand-waving argument. You can make it more precise, but you can see that how these symmetries, the eigenvalues of parities, can show up in the properties of the sample at its ends. Okay, now, I don't want to give much detail about the topological insulator, but you can get a feeling that the similar things might be happening. In the topological insulators, you're dealing with a 3D material, okay? And in a specific case of them, which are invergent symmetric topological insulator, which includes a large class of most famous ones, you can go and look at the time reversal invariant points in the 3D Borellian zone and look at the parity of the eigenstates at these time reversal invariant points, okay? And then multiply them all together. If you get one, you are dealing with a trivial insulator. If you get minus one, you are dealing with a topological insulator, okay? And this was basically, to my opinion, the most important contribution of the Liang-Yang-Kane to this field, to classify all these phases based on their symmetry, okay? Now, what do we know about these topological insulators? Well, most of them have heavy elements like bismuth in it, and that is needed because you need a spin orbit coupling, okay? This spin orbit coupling, what it does is that in the band structure, it can change the order of s and p orbitals. Okay, because the S and P are sensitive differently to the S-bit orbit coupling, so it can push an S orbital up or P orbital down or vice versa. Now, this is important because the parity of S and P orbitals are opposite, okay? So you can make a system going topological or trivial by pushing its S and P orbital up and down. Now, the other thing is that you need a small band gap because you want this spin orbit coupling to do something important. If the band gap is huge, a spin orbit usually has no role in it, okay? Now, in this system, we have time reversal symmetry, contrary to the Hall effect, where there was no time reversal symmetry. And the general feature of them is that, like Hall effect, they are gapped in the bulk, but they do have gapless edge states, which are chiral, meaning the spin and momentum are locked into each other. And this leads to novel effects like anti-localization or protection against backscattering, and make these surfaces that being very good conductors. Okay. Now, in terms of experiments, the probably best experimental signature are now done by ARPS, but this is kind of designed for this detection because it's sensitive to the surface. It can just detect the band structures on the surface and see this gapless surface state. It's interesting. Apparently, people have been seeing this all along before, and they were angry that they can't cleave like bismuth selenide so that they get rid of surface state, because in ARPS before, people wanted to get information about the bulk. But no matter how they cleave it, bismuth selenide doesn't let them get rid of the surface state. And now we know that this is why you can get rid of it. Okay. Now, in most of this topological insulator, probably except the tailor-made ones, the bulk is not really an insulator, meaning the band structure is right, but the chemical potential is not where it has to be, okay? So a natural question that people will ask is that, okay, that's a story nice, but what happens when the chemical potential is here? Now the bulk states also come into the play. Do they wash up these surface state? Can we see any signature of them in anything other than ARPS? Okay. And in fact, not even they are conducting, they become superconducting if you go to low enough temperature. Okay. What I will show here is that that superconductor can be a key to tell you this metallic phase of topological insulators is also different from an ordinary metal or an ordinary insulator, which you dope and make it conducting, okay? And the key is basically the structure of the defects, vortices, or Josephson junctions of this doped topological insulators. So what I will show is that even when they are doped and you make the superconducting phase, you make the doped case superconducting, the signature of topological insulator is there. And interestingly, it goes away if you dope it above a critical value. So if there are two doped, the system doesn't know it was a topological insulator. But if it's not too dope, the system still knows that. Okay. Now, the key is the presence of the so-called, as you probably heard thousands of times this year, around these times, the Majorana mode. So let's see what's Majorana mode in very brief sentences. The Majorana mode is a fermionic mode which is antiparticle of itself. People in high energy have been speculating it and have searched for it, okay? But I don't think there is a single confirmed case of the Majorana mode yet. Now, what about condensed matter? It might seem very unrealistic to assume that there will be a Majorana mode in condensed matter system, but when you think about it, superconductors can come in help. In superconductors, you are dealing with pairs of electrons, okay? And these pairs have no well-defined number, okay? You can condense them. So taking off one pair or adding one pair doesn't change anything, okay? This way, you can show that it might be that adding an electron and taking an electron will be also the same, because you can do one by doing the other and adding a pair or taking off a pair. You can take off an electron, or you can add a pair and take off an electron. Then it seems like you add an electron. But the only difference these two processes have is adding one pair, where the system is not sensitive to. And that's why people were looking for these modes in the superconducting case. These are some of the prominent examples. And theoretically, they predicted them. But in experiments, there was some experiment in Leiden done now a couple of years ago, I think, which made lots of excitement in the community, but it's not still 100% sure that it's been seen. But I will be concerned mainly about this case. So what is it? Okay. The surface state of topological insulator, as I said, is a gapless 2D metal, if you like. You can explain it using the simple Dirac Hamiltonian. And one important feature of this Dirac Hamiltonian, which come in help later, is that if you calculate, if you look at finite chemical potential and calculate the Berry phase around this Fermi surface, 2D Fermi surface, it will end up being pi, okay? Now, you can add superconductivity to this metal, to this 2D metal, okay? And you can assume that this superconductivity has a vortex in it, okay? Now, this Hamiltonian, people who have been working in field theories and high energy physics know it as the Jackie-Rossi Hamiltonian, and it's been known since 81 that this guy has a trapped zero energy state in the vortex, okay? And you can work out the wave function of that zero energy mode and see that it's self-conjugate, okay? So this was done by Fu, and they predicted if you induce, yep.
So you have in mind that there's a field just above HD1, presuming the bulk is a type 2, and then there's a vortex sticking out.
Okay, so.
So one isolated vortex, and this is the.
Exactly, okay. So, I assume that I have a topological insulator really insulating in the bulk, and I put an S-wave superconductor, simple S-wave superconductor on top of it, and then make a vortex go through, okay? Then this S-wave superconductor induces superconductivity in the 2D gas of the surface state, okay? And then the Hamiltonian explaining that 2D surface state is this, and then there will be a zero energy state in the vortex core. Okay?
I guess interactions can also spontaneously in the surface states pair up.
Well, it's very difficult to generate superconductivity in a 2D metal.
In principle.
Yeah, in principle, but fluctuations kills you in the 2D.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is basically the structure. Okay? And this mode will be a Majorana mode, okay? But like Majorana himself, it has not been found. Okay. Now, the question that we asked them was that, okay, we know that TIs can be doped, can be a metal in the bulk. And they can become superconductors. Okay, now what if instead of that setting of putting a real insulating TI, putting a superconductor on top to induce superconductivity, I just look at the boundary of this doped topological insulator, which is superconductor, okay? Will there be a Majorana in the vortex core passing through this, okay? Now, if the chemical potential is really large, meaning we are well high in this conduction band of the topological insulator, you can assume that the system doesn't know anything about these parities of these bands down way below the Fermi surface, and that the natural thinking might be that, okay, at least when they are too much doped, the system should not be different from ordinary metal, and no zero energy Majorana.
Is origin of the superconductivity in dope TI is clear?
No. It's not even 100% confident that if it's S-wave or P-wave. I think it's S-wave, because the reason that people thought that it can be P-wave was one experiment or two experiments showing zero bias peak. Yeah, which has proved it. And there is no interest, no novel feature in the boundary of these guys without anymore. So I think
it's
S-wave. Yeah. And they are not strongly correlated. So there is no strong correlation. All of the interactions are screened. So If I want to bet, I will say it's photon mediated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Now, if the large chemical potential, probably no Majorana. But what if I start from the case where it was insulating and assume, as Will suggested, that the gapping is so strong that even when the bulk is insulating, it's enough to make superconductor on the surface. Remember, on the surface, I have conduction bands. This gap is direct bands. If I assume that attraction is so strong that even though that's the 2D, make it superconductor, then I know that when the bulk chemical potential is in the gap, there will be a Majorana mode in the vortex. Okay? So then the question will be, if I keep increasing, what's the fate of this mode? Where does it go? Okay. Now, one first guess that you might want to make is that, okay, so this is the surface band. This is the bulk band. They cross at some point, okay? And if the chemical potential is put right on this crossing, okay, then you don't need to provide any momentum or energy to move to have this surface state go into the bulk and vice versa. So maybe the system doesn't know about this interesting surfaces when you are at this chemical potential, and that might be the critical value where the Majorana goes away. Okay, this is where the system forgets where it was topological, because the surface state can get solved in the bulk. Okay? Yep.
You're assuming that they overlap exactly along it's like a
This is one assumption.
But as a cut, you know, along the
exactly. Exactly.
Principally, it could sort of have different dispersion around and only touch a number of points.
Yes, exactly. But I want to show that even this is wrong, that will be also wrong. Okay? And the reason for it is simple, somehow topological reason. It's that if you have a Majorana mode, the only way to kill it is with another Majorana mode. Okay? If you don't have another one to hybridize with, it will be there. Okay. Now, if this is the right picture, if I put some local potential on the surface, this can move the band structure of the surface. Okay? And that will move, when this move up and down, that will move the critical value of this transition. Okay? But this doesn't make sense because the transition needs another Majorana guy. Okay? So this doesn't work. And in fact, when you think about it, the only other Majorana mode that you have to hybridize with is at the other end of a vortex, which is going through the topological insulator. So assume this was the topological insulator. Assume that first the chemical potential is in the bulk, okay? Then assume that the interaction is so strong that you make superconductivity even when you only have the surface distance, okay? Now, there's a one Majorana mode here and the other one wherever it goes out, okay? Now, start increasing the chemical potential. When you're in the band, it means that bulk is also now, okay? And it can become superconductor and carry vortex modes, okay? If the energy of these vortex modes, which are now along the superconductor, becomes zero, then you will have a gapless channel for the two Majorana modes to talk and annihilate. Okay? And then after that, when you pass over this gapless region, the two have and disappear. Okay? So this was the conjecture. And to prove it, we need to look at the structure of the unreversed states in the bulk of the topological insulator. Now, the structure of unreversed states in the vortices has an old history. You know, this theory work by Caroli and Dijan showed that when you have an S-wave superconductor along the vortex, there are in-gap modes whose energy goes with n plus a half when n is integer times this mini gap. Okay? And it has been experimentally observed. Now, this n plus a half has to do, when you work it out, has to do with the angular momentum of the fermionic modes, okay? in the vortex. Now, because of the half, this never becomes zero. Okay? You can never have a gapless mode in the ordinary SOS superconductor along the vortex. Now, let's see what will be the case for the topological insulator. The good news is you can have a very simple model, just a four-band model, which is a topological insulator, and you can model it on the lattice. Okay, so you put these four orbitals on a square lattice and just design the hoppings smartly between these different orbitals, and you get the Hamiltonian explaining a topological insulator. Okay? Now, the important feature that you see this, and it has its foot on that classification based on the parity of different transversal symmetric points, is that if you look at this Hamiltonian, this is for the bulk of a topological insulator. It's a 3D Dirac Hamiltonian, okay? And it has a mass term, okay? So basically this term anticommutes with all the rest. Tau is a Pauli matrix acting on the orbital structure and sigma on the regular spin. Now, this guy has a momentum dependence. Basically, at momentum equal to zero, if say M and capital M and small m are equal, at M momentum equal to zero, this has opposite sign at zero and all the k is equal to pi. Okay? Now this is connected to that classification, but the important point is the mass changes sign. Now you can also look at the low energy Hamiltonian of this model. You can just look at close to this bottom of the band, and you get this simple, nice looking 3D Dirac Hamiltonian, just with the mass term, which has momentum dependence. Okay? Now that I have the real space structure, I can do numerics. So what we did was to put this system, this lattice Hamiltonian, on a torus, and add superconductivity, okay, so in the mean field level, so basically we add a finite gap everywhere. And it's an on-site simple S-wave pairing within an orbital, so it just spin up and down pair, but with the same orbital, okay? And then look at the low energy and look at the low energy state of this Hamiltonian as we vary the chemical potential. The interesting thing is, you get this structure when the chemical potential is in the gap of the topological insulator. It's up to here, okay? Then all the pairing happens on the boundary, okay? And you just get a gap. Now we also put a vortex going through this torus, so it doesn't cross its boundary, because the vortex doesn't cross the boundary. There is no in-gap mode. There is no vortex crossing where you have the superconductivity. Now, when you increase the chemical potential on the other hand, the bulk becomes superconductor and sees the vortex, and you start seeing the in-gap mode of the vortex. Okay? And the energy of these in-gap modes decrease as you increase the chemical potential up to a critical value, okay, where it becomes zero and the particle and Hort branch cross. Yeah.
This is a solid torus, and then you're doing...
This is, yeah, because I had the lattice model, I introduced...
Pretty lattice model.
Yeah.
And look at this solid torus.
Yes, yes.
You put a vortex...
Along it, yeah. You can put it in a placket.
Torus, right?
Sorry?
So where's the vortex?
It's a solid torus, it's not a...
Vortex goes along this.
So it's
this is a boundary.
So it's just a it's pockets, right?
So it's not like I'm sorry, is this a this is a 2D model?
No, it's a 3D. The bulk
it's
is a
3D.
Oh,
right?
Okay, I see, it's a real donut.
Yeah, it's a real donut. So
yeah.
The bulk is basically this is a 3D Hamiltonian, right?
Yeah.
K,
yeah.
X, Y, Z. Okay.
Right.
So this is actually important differentiation.
Right. Okay.
The bulk of a topological insulator, the low energy state in the bulk, is also a Dirac Hamiltonian, but a 3D massive Dirac Hamiltonian. The surface is a gapless 2D Dirac Hamiltonian. Okay? But now I put this unreal lattice. Okay? Put this unreal lattice put the lattice on a torus, and I can model a vortex going through the vortex, basically by just designing the phases around one set of plaquettes inside the torus. Okay?
In this case, your surface is connected. It's not like you don't have like a top and bottom surface.
Right.
So how do the edge states look like on this thing? So you have no
well, they get some gap, okay? But I'm not interested in that. The vortex doesn't go through them.
So there's a gap because they live on the same...
Yeah. And the calculation has to do, the size of the gap has with the geometry of this curve. You have to calculate lots of spin connections as you go around them. This has been worked out by Don Kai and many other people, but that's not of my interest.
Okay,
so the first thing we did was that we say, okay, let's look at the wave function of these zero energy states. Let's Fourier transform it, okay? See what we get. When you Fourier transform it, okay, you see that, you put the momentum along the vortex. We put the momentum along the vortex equal to zero because that's probably where the low energy states are. The momentum along the vortex is still a good quantum number. You can put it equal to zero. Then Fourier transform the wave function in the other two momentum. Okay? What you see is that this zero energy state is highly peaked on a certain region. Okay? Now, if you look at this region, you see that this region is exactly where this mass parameter of the 4D of the 3D Hamiltonian was vanishing. Okay? So it's kind of signaling something to you. It seems that the critical chemical potential happens when that mass term vanishes, okay? Now let's see if we can understand this more clearly, okay? The first thing we did, which was the most painful part of this whole project, was to look at the low energy 4D Hamiltonian, put momentum along the vortex equal to zero, okay? So you can't put momentum perpendicular to vortex equal to zero because that's not translation invariant. Then you get this simple looking differential equation and you have to solve. Okay? Now, what happened was that what we saw is that you will have a zero energy state along the vortex if and only if your Fermi momentum is where it makes this term vanish, okay? So this is telling you is that basically the system remembers it was topological up to the point where you reach this momentum zero, okay? From a start with the negative, mass zero. You start with the negative mass, increase the chemical potential. As soon as you cross this point where the mass become positive, the system forget. Okay, that it had this mass inversion and it was a topological insulator. Okay, now this is only the case when the system is symmetric, so that you can write the mass as this form, m minus simple epsilon k perpendicular squared. If the simple system was not symmetric, you could not write it like this. Okay, so the question, next question is how general is this? Okay. And in fact, you can do an interesting calculation, which is, in fact, much easier than solving that differential equation, and write down the Bogoliubov-Dejean Hamiltonian of this system. The vortex you can write at this as this form. It's just a simple, you know, vortex, nothing ordinary about it. Then the trick is to replace this position with derivative with respect to momentum, okay? You get this form. And now remember, because I had this multiple orbital structure, as I go around the Fermi surface, the orbital content also change, okay? So when I'm taking the derivative with respect to momentum, there will be a gauge field added to it because as you change, you are also changing the orbital content. And that's basically a non-abelian gauge field, because you know, you have to calculate it in terms of these two orbital structures. Now, if you write down this very connection factor, this will have just eigenvalues equal to some number. And you can work out the low energy state along the vortex using a Bohr-Sommerfeld type calculation. Okay? And it ends up to be this equation now. Remember, the Károly Dejean was like 2 pi n plus pi, and it never became pi. But now, the Berry phase around the Fermi surface cut. So I put the vortex momentum along the vortex equal to 0, then I will be dealing with the curve on the Fermi surface. Okay? Then calculate the Berry phase as you go around this Fermi surface. Okay? That also show up in the energy of the low energy modes as this phi b. Now, when this phi b become pi, you do have zero energy states. And this phi b, you can simply calculate by just knowing the band structure, knowing the orbital content, you can put it in the computer, and it easily calculates this phi b for you. Okay? Now, you can ask the interesting question. You know that up to some level of doping, the system doesn't become superconducting. Now, the question is this level that you have to reach to make the system superconducting above this critical value or below this critical value? If it's below this critical value, you can have a doped superconducting topological insulator which supports this zero energy mode in its vortex. Okay? But if it's above, means that as soon as you make it superconductor, you are already past this value, so there is no zero energy mode along the vortex on the surface. And in fact, we also confirmed this using self-consistent BDG solutions, okay? Because someone can claim that semi-classical calculations sometimes miss the zero-point fluctuations. Like if you calculate the energy of harmonic oscillator, it doesn't give you the half. And then people can complain that you might have missed this offset from zero energy, but this was also confirmed. Yep.
So what do you mean by self-consistent BDG? Normally you need a Hamiltonian for that.
Yes, so you also put the gap as a free parameter.
Yeah.
In the Bogolyubov-Dejean Hamiltonian.
Right.
You diagonalize it.
Yeah.
And then refit it to calculate the gap again. So you start with some guess value of the gap.
Right.
You drive the wave function.
Right.
But the gap is related to that wave function. Basically, if you put some magnitude of interaction, the gap is the expectation
yeah.
value of that magnitude.
But you need a pairing.
You need a Hamiltonian.
You need a yeah.
to do that.
Yeah. So the pairing.
It's not just
yeah.
the BDG Hamiltonian.
Sure.
The
you need
the
pairing. Yeah. You need the pairing part, right?
So you have
yeah.
to have some Hamiltonian
exactly.
to give rise to this.
Exactly. Exactly.
And, okay.
Exactly.
So you do that.
Yes.
And
so,
it's self-consistent in delta.
Yes.
Okay, but not, okay, so other things like the vector potential and stuff like that, it's not.
No.
No.
Okay. But we put the vortices in, we put the vortex in basically,
yeah. Yeah.
and then solve it self-consistently. So we keep the phase around Plaquette's fix. So
mm-hmm.
if you like, we put the position of vortex at some point
okay.
and then run it.
Yeah. Can you understand this transition? So, because I could just look at the vortex, right? So then
exactly.
I'm dealing with one-dimensional model, and
exactly.
then this transition
exactly.
probably maps to Kitaev model, right?
It does.
And then you can.
It does.
This is the phase transition.
Yes,
right?
It does. But we couldn't see that before doing the calculation. So the calculation is done on the vortex. We just calculate the energy of the modes along the vortex. I don't consider the ends to start with,
mm-hmm.
okay? But then after we did it, we saw that you can map it to the Kitaev layer. But that's absolutely right, okay?
So this Berry phase is going around the vortex? Or
so the Berry phase is like this. I have this 3D Ti. Okay. And I make it doped, so it's conducting in the bulk. Now, in the bulk, you have a sphere, Fermi sphere. It's a 3D, right? Now, I put a vortex going through and put the momentum along the vortex equal to zero, okay? This means that if this is your Fermi surface, you take a cut on the Fermi surface and you put the momentum along the vortex equal to zero, okay? Then, yeah, you're dealing with this guy, and the very phase is as you go around this guy.
So right now there's is it superconducting it, or is it?
No. This is property of the metallic state.
Okay.
But you can show that the energy of the gap mode in the superconducting state is related to this property of the parent metal. All right. Okay.
That's quantized the zero pi, right?
I'm only interested in the zero energy state.
So
sorry?
Is 5B like any random real number?
It is what?
5B.
5B, yeah. 5B, yeah. Because it's the two orbital state. If it was single orbital, you only could get zero or pi. But because it's not, this can be anything. Remember, this is a 2D guy, okay? You always have a 5B and minus 5B. So if you're concerned about the time yourself, you're fine. But the value can be anything.
Okay.
If it was a single band, you can only get zero or pi. But because there are two bands, you can. We can talk about it more. And then because we had this formula, we could plug in the band structure of different topological insulators and see for which of them this critical value is above the value you need for making it superconductor, and these are the candidates, okay? That fits the criteria, okay. Now, you can do the same exercise with the Josephson junction. Just assume that you have a bulk of topological insulator, okay? And you add a strong superconducting pairing to the problem, okay? When the chemical potential is in the bulk gap, you only have superconductivity on the surface, say here. Now, put the momentum parallel to the junction equal to zero. Two of the, the momentum along the junction equal to zero. Then the low energy states are just these two Fermi points, okay? And this is the simple mean field Hamiltonian explaining the superconductivity. Now, notice this sigma x, which is a spin operator, commutes with the Hamiltonian, okay? Then I can consider separately eigenvalue of this 1 or minus 1, and I get two simple Jackie-Rabai model. This is just the Jackie-Rabai Hamiltonian, okay? Now notice, sigma equal to 1 explain this branch, sigma equal to minus 1 this branch. So this says that in general, you can get two zero energy modes on this boundary. One of them will be moving this way, one of them this way, but they don't hybridize because they have different sigma x, okay? Now, again, you can assume that the bulk is getting doped. Then the bulk Hamiltonian is this guy, which is 4 by 4. Now you add superconductivity to it. Because this is 4 by 4, you have basically degenerate conduction and valence bands, and you will get 4 Fermi points, okay? Now, you can again see that sigma x again commute with this. And then you can treat each sigma x value eigenvalue separately, but now these two Fermi point wave functions are not always independent, and they can hybridize. This zero energy state that you get in the bulk can hybridize. And the magnitude of this hybridization has to do with this magnitude of this gap, this bulk band gap, which was okay. Okay, and when it's vanished, there is no hybridization between these two. So what this means is that it's kind of the same footing. Now for the Josephson junction, if you increase the chemical potential at the point that the mass gap at these Fermi points vanish, then you get a zero energy mode along the junction. And when you have it, this zero energy states, which were at different ends, talk and this disappear. Okay? Now, the reason I said this is that now we have an experiment which seems to signaling that seeing the signature of this transition in the topological insulator. So this is the set. So they take these films of bismuth selenide, okay, and they are ticking off so that the two surfaces don't talk to each other much, okay? But the interesting feature of them is that they are kind of engineered chemically so that it's known that the conductivity of the film does not depend on thickness, okay? So this is a good signature that the main contribution to the gapless features comes from the boundary, not from the bulk, okay? And then they engineer this Josephson junction, okay, with these properties, if you're interested in knowing it. And then what they do is to measure critical current of the junction and the normal state resistivity on the junction, okay? If you first look at the normal state resistivity, okay, this is probably the Dirac cone. So they are gating the junction, basically changing the chemical potential in the junction. And this is the surface Dirac cone, probably. This is the common signature you also see in graphene. Now, this seems like some band is getting empty, this feature, okay? Now, if you look at the critical current, okay, you see a more interesting pattern. You get a flat critical current as you gate, and then sudden drop, okay? And again, a continuous feature, okay? Now notice that this sudden drop happens at like minus 13, but the emptying of whatever you were emptying happens at minus 20, okay? Also, this is the gating potential. If I want to show you the figure, this is basically, he put this on top of the junction, so he just gates the junction through, okay? So here, this means that this probably happens comparing with this even before that, because the superconductivity screens a bit of the gating, okay? So the thing that he knows is that this feature happens way before this band gets empty.
Okay, so below minus 20, that's the surface state. Above minus 20 is...
Exactly. There is something contributing from a quadratic band. Exactly. Okay? And more interestingly, if you multiply this critical current by normal state resistivity, you get something which doesn't, it is known that you get something which doesn't depend on the like density of a state or something like that. It just depends on the geometry of the junction. And what you see is that you get really flat ICRM like you see in any other semi-doped semiconductor junction, then sudden drop, and then flat again, okay? Now, the model we have this in terms of our story is this. So you have this Josephson junction. Now, for any semiconductor, when you make a film, there is some band bending close to the boundary. Basically, the chemical potential potential shifts when you're close to the boundary, okay? So basically, I can assume that this is the band structure of the bulk. This is the surface band. Now, the chemical potential on close to the boundary is shifted with respect to the bulk. This is the bulk chemical potential. This is close to the boundary. And close to the boundary, it crosses this quadratic bands. Okay? Now, what he does, this is the chemical potential of close to the boundary. This is that critical value that I calculated before, where the system goes from a topological to the normal state, okay? Now, what he does with his gating is that because of the screening, he can only shift the chemical potential close to this boundary, okay? So his gating is basically taking this chemical potential and move it up and down, okay? Now, when the chemical potential is, say, in the gap of the two-deck or anywhere below this critical value, this two-deck is just like a topological insulator, and all the interesting underwave states are living on this boundary, okay? Now, when he pushed it up above that critical value, this boundary become like a normal metal, okay? That has no memory of those topological features, okay? Now, the boundary between the topological region and normal region is now here, below that two-deck region, instead of being here. So those underwave states, in fact, move down, okay? Now, the transparency of junction here and down, there is nothing to say it's equal. So this is basically like changing the geometry of your junction, suddenly changing the transparency of your junction, okay? And you can model this numerically, in fact, by putting the momentums parallel to the junction equal to zero and just shifting this value. You can see that the low energy states are first localized here, which is like here. And then at some value of chemical potential, which is within this band, before this band gets empty, they jump to this region.
Why is the peak much smaller?
Okay, because when this here, the chemical potential is like here in the real gap, okay? When it's in the real gap, this localization is controlled by the bulk gap, okay? Now you start entering the band, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The localization is now controlled by the superconducting gap, which can be much smaller, okay? That's why you're much well localized here than here. So these are protected just by the superconducting gap. These guys are protected by the bulk gap, okay?
So
but
in the experiment, you talked about what are the values of these gaps?
It's the bismuth selenide. So it's like 100 MeV, the bulk gap. But the critical temperature is like a few Kelvin. So the superconducting gap is tiny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but in this model, I don't put in realistic values. I just want to see that this shift happens by changing the gap. Okay, so basically, in conclusion, I showed that these doped topological insulators do retain some features of their parent insulating compound. And basically the thing that they remember is this band inversion. So if you dope them to a level that this band inversion is gone, the system is just like a normal metal. Okay? Now, this critical doping can be calculated. Just give me a band structure. I can calculate it for any material. And the other important message is that even a simple S-wave pairing, which in my opinion is the case for many of them, have features which are unique, which are exciting, and we all already see it in the experiment. Now, I believe that model is correct for the experiment. Even if it's not correct, this drop, I don't, at least what I heard from experimentalists, has not been seen in any other type of Josephson junction made out of the doped semiconductors. And it's a huge jump. It can be up to 30% jump. So even if my model is wrong, this is an interesting feature to see why it happens. And if you are interested in the references, these are basically three main references of this work, the works I presented here. Thank you.
Questions? So maybe you, maybe I missed this. So in the beginning, you mentioned that you just put a large diffraction to make the 2D surface to be superconducting.
Oh, I don't put an interaction. I just put a finite superconducting gap.
Later on, you mentioned that you do self-consistent calculations.
Yes, it's this paper, if you want.
One would imagine that the superconductivity mainly from coming from the finite Fermi surface from bulk, right? So
right.
That's where the self-consistent calculation
exactly.
is doing.
Right, exactly. Yeah, here we have lots of details of that one. If you're interested, the self-consistency is done here.
Questions? Sorry, so in your previous slide, you don't expect any conductance to the bulk.
Sorry?
Can you go back to the couple? This one,
yeah.
So you don't expect, once the chemical potential is, you know, past UC, you don't expect any conductance to the bulk?
Past mu C, okay. So mu C,
Once you reach.
Oh, this is the superconducting state. Right, all the on-river states do contribute to the supercurrent. Okay, but the thing is, the lower energy ones they contribute more than the higher energy ones. This is only the lowest on-river states, lowest energy on-river states. Okay, of course there are all those guys, but I can't come up a model that the contribution of those guys suddenly change. But the drop in the supercurrent was the sudden drop. It's not something continuously happening. Interestingly, if you look at the more disordered junctions where they have lots of charging impurities, this kind of gets widened out. And I can understand that because that means that you're not uniformly gating the full sample. The chemical potential is varying. So you have regions which passed over this region which has not. And that's why it kind of widens.
So actually, presumably from this you can calculate supercurrent, right? From
those
on-river
states, yeah.
On
right.
So you guys try it?
Well, you need to know what's the transparency of the junction.
Well, let's say you assume that, you know, it's high transparency, right?
If it's uniform? If it's uniform between here and here, you don't see any jump.
I see. So you need to really assume that.
Yeah.
So, but is your guess that transparency would be higher on top or?
No, on bottom. On the bottom.
And the sign matches, right?
Yeah, the sign matches. Exactly.
Matches.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that exactly matches. That matches. The other thing that might be involved is that, as we talked briefly, is that because you're gating, when they are here or here, they are seeing different density of state, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that also contributes to the magnitude of the supercurrent. Okay,
yeah.
And the direction of change is correct,
mm-hmm.
but you can't explain that exact magnitude of the change using.
Yeah, that's
yeah. Right. Right.
And also, I was wondering. So, going back to the vortex, right?
Okay.
So, can you probably you could find the effective Lorentz Hamiltonian of the vortex, right, and find the topological invariant.
Yes. As I said, and you suggested, it will be just the same as Kitaev wire. It's the same class.
And it really only depends on the Bayes space, right?
Exactly.
So you don't even need the, right, at this point, surface states might be completely gone.
Exactly. You don't even need necessarily a topological insulator. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because the topological insulator you get, the strong topological insulator, when you have even number of time reversal invariant point, parities multiply to -1, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You can have cases where at 2 points, parity multiplies to minus one. Okay? But the critical chemical potential for the transition is not necessarily the same for the for both of these points. So you can imagine you put the chemical potential at the point where one of them is past this transition, one of them not. You again get that those zero energy points. Okay. So actually these compounds that we did the calculation for, these ones, these are some ordinary insulators because they have band inversion at even number of gamma points.
Uh-huh.
But if you fine-tune the chemical potential, you can be at the point where you do see Majoranas at the end of vortex.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that the Berry phase depends on the details of the band structure. So for example, if you have a trivial band also involved, like what is it in the ternary topological insulators, that also affects this value of the critical chemical potential. Because although it's somehow topologically invariant, it has a non-trivial Berry phase when the chemical potential is in the trivial band. It's a multi-orbital system, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if you play the same game with a weak TI, is there any reason to expect something qualitatively interesting? Or it's just,
as I said, even for ordinary insulators.
But
okay.
So
there is
would
no
a weak
difference.
TI be something different?
Sure. Even the direction of the vortex can affect the transition point. Because remember, I put the momentum along the vortex equal to zero.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, which Fermi surface cut you do, it depends on where direction the vortex is. Okay? So the Berry phase can be different on different cuts.
Cool.
So, yeah. But there's nothing telling you that this doesn't work in weak TI. Weak TIs also do some band inversion. What it wants, it only wants some band inversion, no matter odd or even number of them. Then there is somewhere you can put the chemical potential.
So in that sense, a weak TI would be a better place to look at.
It might be, but it depends on details of the band. For example, in that last reference, we showed that a ternary TI is probably a much better case, because then that this one in this one. Because in that case, the trivial band can be very efficient in changing this Berry phase and where the critical chemical potential is. So basically, you can get superconductivity, okay, way below this critical chemical potential because you have an extra band to play.
Right.